Cowboy Bebop first aired in Japan in 1998. It's since become one of the most celebrated animes of all time. It came to the U.S. 20 years ago as part of Cartoon Network's then brand new late night programming block, Adult Swim, and it was soon a hit among an audience much broader than cartoon fans. Even Fresh Air with Terry Gross encouraged people to tune in with a review in 2002, which touched on its mix of styles, noir, western, spy thriller, and science fiction, its mature and complex characters, its top-tier soundtrack. I mean, just check out the theme titled Tank.
I think it's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Two decades later, Cowboy Bebop has gotten the live-action treatment from Netflix. Actor John Cho plays its lead role, the smooth-talking and butt-kicking bounty hunter with great hair, Spike Siegel. Like the original anime, the story follows Spike and his crew in the year 2071 ambling around space in a ship called the Bebop to pick up bounties and run into trouble. Here's a clip from the show featuring Spike and his partner Jet Black, played by Mustafa Shakir, and new crewmate Faye Valentine, played by Daniela Pineda. She's wounded, but a bit more interested in something rare and unusual in the ship. A dog, a corgi specifically.
Got a first aid kit. Clean that up for you.
It's fine.
Looks pretty bad.
It's a graze.
She reminds you of somebody?
The cosmonaut.
Thank you. Pumpkin on Popo.
Hell of a night, huh?
Technically morning.
What?
Nothing. Okay. How about you take us to the Murdochs?
Yeah, I'm tracking them now, Skinny. Okay, so we can intercept them at Mars, and then... What is that?
That's a dog. You never seen one?
Sure, in zoos, next to the dragon sanctuary and unicorn exhibit. I hear these things are like 20, 30 million a pop.
He's not for sale.
I hear they're pretty tasty, too.
It's not for eating.
And John Cho joins me now. Hi, John.
How are you?
I'm doing great. So when you were getting ready to take on this role, how important was it to you to watch the anime? And what were you looking for when you were watching the anime of Bebop, Cowboy Bebop?
I was watching first to understand what the show was, what the world was, and what the tone was. And then I was just looking in terms of how to play him. I was just looking for any kind of foothold I could see. And, you know, I wasn't really sure how to do this. I'd never adapted an illustration, you know? So the physicality became the most important thing for me. The training was really important. And then he has a very distinct physicality, the way he stands and leans and walks and smokes. And I just tried to see if those offered clues, those positions offered clues. And they did. And I sort of sank into it with the help of some great scripts.
Tell me about the training process, because it becomes clear from the jump you had to do a lot of training.
Yeah, it was, you know, as intense as you can be in the time period we had. But I just tried to learn as much as I could, in the time that we were given. And so there was physical training. There was just, you know what, really, we just went through an encyclopedia of how to kill people. And that's what it was. Punching, kicking, stabbing, shooting. It was all of the above. It was a crash course in the human history of maiming each other.
You know, invariably, there's going to be two different groups of people who come to this. People who are huge fans of the anime, and then there's going to be a whole group who, for them, this is the experience of Cowboy Bebop, this live action.
Right.
When
right.
you were having conversations with the creative team, what kind of conversations did you have about the audience?
Well, we definitely wanted to serve both, and that was sort of from the jump. That's what we were talking about. One was to give identifiable nods mm-hmm. to the people who had watched the anime, and we knew, or we were guessing what their expectations would be, but we also wanted to give them something new with the familiar. There's no reason to do it if you're not doing that. So to that end, we were talking about revealing things about the character that maybe that they'd be surprised by and not expect. And in terms of showing, getting new viewers in, it was really leaning into the original stuff mm-hmm. Because we thought we were so confident that the world would be one that would really surprise and please people. It certainly was for me. When I first watched it, I just couldn't believe how original it was and what a vision it was to mash up all these genres into one super fun world.
You mentioned really great scripts. You read a lot of scripts. What's particularly great about these scripts?
Well, I would say, as you alluded to in your intro, it's really the mixture of genres and how effortlessly it does touch on noir and comedy and action and westerns. It was how are they pulling this off, really? And sometimes I felt like it was from character to character, I was in a different movie altogether. And sometimes it would be a 30 screwball comedy, and sometimes it would be a Clint Eastwood film. And, you know, so that was really the excitement of it for me.
My guest is John Cho. We're talking about Cowboy Bebop, which is now playing on Netflix. You have a unique position in that you have played another character that has an enormous following, Sulu in Star Trek. Obviously this has a huge following. Compare the fan reactions. How do they compare?
You know, I haven't been out in the world that much, but so far so good. And mm-hmm. and my experience with Star Trek was that your intentions mean a lot to fans, and they just need to know that you care about it as much as they do. And we certainly did. There were every craftsperson on the film seemed to be a big fan of the anime, and so there was an extra level of devotion, I would say. And you know, the discussions on set were, you have normal discussions like, do you want to select this lighter for your character, or this lighter, or this watch, or that watch? And normally it's, I think my guy would like this. In our situation, it was always, we could go for this, but this one's more bebop, and whatever mm-hmm. that meant. And so we were trying to get at this very difficult to define thing that was the bebop vibe. And so I hope the fans pick up on that.
Talking about vibes, the music is such a big part of this, and the audio soundscape and the audio design. Do you have any sense of what the music's going to be like? Because it also helps set up all those different genres. It helps scaffold them as we're watching.
We didn't when we were shooting, although we were constantly playing music on set, frequently jazz. And when we would see, especially the fight sequences, they would shoot the fight sequences with stuntmen and present them to the actors to get a feel for what was going on. And those were always scored with the bebop soundtrack, I think, so that one, we would understand what the finished product would be. And it was also an inspiration for the stunt people. This is the vibe that it has to be. The fights are never just about the physicality. It's always witty. It's always telling a story. And there's a sense of humor to it all, an absurdity.
You know, being an Asian American actor, being anybody of an underrepresented group, there's always this double-edged sword of representation, right? You're like, yay, great, we get to be part of this universe. But not all representation is good representation. the certain scripts you get and certain things you decide, yeah, I don't need to perpetuate this sort of stereotype. What has changed as you have gone through your career with that wow. double-edged sword?
Well, I would say there have been a number of changes, but they're generally driven by technology and the business. And, you know, when I started in the late 90s, that was before the internet really took hold and fractured the number of outlets we had. And so as the audience split up into smaller fragments, I think you saw more creativity. And you also saw a higher demand for talent. And then you also had people able to reach more people from their homes. Mm-hmm. And so you saw a cultural shift that kind of followed a technological shift. And as a result, we're living in a more pluralistic business, and therefore you're seeing more pluralistic storytelling, I think.
Is there a story that you want to tell that hasn't been told yet?
Many. You know, I say that there are Asian American stories that I'm keen on telling, some that are very personal to me, but I also am careful to say I don't necessarily want to tell identifiably, quote, Asian stories mm-hmm. necessarily, and that I don't think that we should hem ourselves in at the outset by only striving to tell what everyone else perceives as Asian. I think we ought to try and expand what that means, and to the point that maybe it's meaningless. you know what I mean? I just think we ought to, artists should be the last people to put boundaries on ourselves.
My guest is John Cho. We're talking about Cowboy Bebop and other things. Cowboy Bebop is on Netflix. Okay, so tell me if this is true or not, if the internet has been lying to me or not, because we know the internet. You have a novel coming out? A young reader novel coming
yes,
out?
Yes, I have a middle grade novel coming out. It's the title is Troublemaker, and it'll be out March 22nd of next year.
All right, tell us what it's about.
I'll tell you first, if you'll allow me, how it happened.
Please.
And it was during the pandemic. We were at home, and we were watching the protests over George Floyd's murder, and we had anti-Asian violence, and we had the kids at home, and I was reflecting a lot on my childhood, on my journey of immigration, and starting to evaluate where we were as a country. And those thoughts were in my head as we were locked up at home. And I had a deal to write a different book, but I called my publisher and I said, I think I have to get this out of my system somehow. Mm-hmm. So the idea came to me. My thoughts drifted back to 1992 and the Los Angeles riots that were sparked by the beating of Rodney King. And so this story came to me, and it's about a boy, a 12-year-old boy who's suspended from school and comes home on April 29th, 1992. Mm. His parents have a liquor store in South Central Los Angeles, and the dad goes to board up the store in anticipation of trouble. And the boy decides that he must protect his father. And sneaks out of the house with his father's gun in his backpack, determined to deliver it mm-hmm. to him that evening. And the book is the story of that night.
Well, you said in early in the answer that you really felt like it was on your chest. It was in your heart. What emotions?
I think I was trying to reconcile where we were as a country at that moment and what I thought the country was as a kid and what I was told about my country, about our capacity for improvement and change, and what our ideals were, and were we And I was wondering whether we were making progress or the opposite. And those are the things that were on my mind. Or was this what we always were? Maybe I was mistaken, you know? And so I was sort of reflecting on my childhood, my kids' childhood, and measuring the differences. And those were all things that were in my mind. I'm still trying to understand what I was feeling last year. And I'm still trying to understand what country my children live in and what their futures might be, to what degree race will play a role in their lives. I mean, I think, especially for immigrants, the idea is that each generation feels that sting less and less, and someday in the future, it's gone. You see no mark. And I'm reevaluating that, revisiting that, and wondering what it will be.
And that's coming out in March. It's called The Troublemaker?
It's called Troublemaker, yes.
Troublemaker. Okay. John Cho has a book, Troublemaker, coming out in March. You can watch him in Cowboy Bebop now. John, thank you so much for joining us. And we went
thank
down
you.
A deep road, but I think it was a good conversation.
I love it.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.